This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
What is up, everybody? Happy Friday Eve, as I like to say. We are almost there, y'all. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is Thursday, and that means I am joined by a most excellent guest co-host, Tom Paulswitz, one of the most reasonable men in politics. Welcome back to The Maggie Dawn Show, Tom. Can you turn Tom on for me, Cardi?
Yes, one second.
Here we go. We'll try one more time.
Tom, you're on.
Welcome back.
Hey, Maggie, how you doing?
I'm doing just peachy keen. How are your holiday preparations going, my friend?
They are actually going well. We've already went to see some Christmas lights. We went down to Candy Cane Lane, which I think is something that everybody who lives in Milwaukee should do. Got the Christmas decorations up and not enjoying today's cold, though.
No, it is quite the cold snap. I hope everybody out there is staying warm. We have one of our very regular callers on the air already, and she has something quick that she wants to say before she has kids to get on the bus. So, of course, Cindy from Appleton, it's always great to see you. My caller, Keel, what did you have to say? And say hello to Tom, please.
Thanks, Maggie. Hi, Tom. Well, I am just really upset because I heard that Time Magazine has made the convicted rapist, the convicted felon, the man of the year this year, and I hope a lot of people dump their subscriptions to Time. Shame on them.
Cindy, I wish I could say that I planned your phone call, but I did not. Tom and I, in fact, are going to be talking about that very thing today amongst some of the other breaking news. I just before we get to that, Tom, I just want to tease out, because I've been talking about it a bunch, and I wanted to get your impressions on it. We have CNN running in the studio, and right now the Chyron is talking about how people that are so frustrated with our health industry have been calling Mr. Luigi Mangione, the man who allegedly, and based on the evidence as reported in the media to date, seems clearly to have been the man who murdered the United Healthcare CEO last week in New York City. People are calling him a hero. Tom, I wanted to get your reactions to this before we move on to the Time Magazine issue and cover. I've come out very clearly and said this man is not a hero. We do not do vigilantism. And what does this mean if the most privileged among us start taking up arms and blowing people away? I mean, this kid had everything. He had access. He had privilege. He had wealth. He was extremely highly educated. What's your take on this situation?
Well, in addition to those things, he had debilitating pain.
Yes.
And I think one of the challenges we have in this country when it comes to healthcare is there just doesn't seem to be anybody responsible to help people when they have debilitating pain. And I will agree with you, he's not a hero, but clearly he's touched a nerve.
Yes.
And I think the nerve, at least for me, is, you know, because I'm part of the, I get my health insurance through the ACA. Being an independent contractor, I'm basically at the mercy of whether we can afford enough to be able to pay for coverage, which frankly is not very good coverage with very high deductibles.
Yes.
And, you know, luckily I'm in a position where I can pay that, but I know there's a lot of people that aren't. Mm-hmm. But I think the bigger issue here is coverage.
Yes.
It's what is covered and what's not covered. And I know, even though I pay the insurance company, they don't work for me.
Mm.
And I think that's an important distinction for people to understand is even though you pay your premiums, the insurance company does not work for you. They work for themselves and they work for the profit that they make. Some are, you know, I know that a lot of healthcare businesses right now under the guise of nonprofit insurance companies are there to make money and they do it very well. And they also know that if they deny coverage, they make more money.
Yeah, which is, it's sort of similar to me, like to nonprofit hospitals. I mean, give me a break. They're still making money. And the very,
a lot of money
and paying really huge salaries. The very idea, and not all health insurance companies are nonprofit either, you know. So the very idea that for-profit enterprises are operating and make or break whether or not someone can access healthcare to me is, I mean, crazy. I mean, that's just, it makes no sense. Like, of course it's not working well for people because that's a stupid premise to set up a healthcare delivery system in, quote, the world's richest country, right? It just, it doesn't work for me. I've also always thought it was stupid to tie your healthcare coverage to who your employer is. Like that,
yes.
To your very point, Tom, you go through the ACA because you have to. This is not a good way to do this.
Right. And I will also say that the reason we're able to get into the ACA is because they had to drop the, you know, pre-existing condition clause that allowed insurance companies to deny people even coverage. So now they have to cover it. It doesn't have to be affordable, but at least I can get coverage. If that's dropped by the ACA, though, I will tell you right now, and my wife and I have had this discussion, I'll have to go find a job because that's the only way that I can get health insurance then. Which doesn't make any sense to me. And if you think about all the entrepreneurs out there, if they have to go back and get jobs because they can't get coverage, what does that mean for business growth in our society? And what does it mean for our economy moving forward? But I will also say that, you know, the healthcare industry itself there's collusion.
Yes.
There's no price transparency. Yeah. There's none of the idea that this is a, you know, privatized marketplace that allows you to go and seek competition. There isn't competition.
Yeah. And that's the, you know, all of the factors that an economist would point to,
yes,
for, you know, monopsony, like oligopoly, all these fancy words that economists use that basically means that customers aren't going to be served well and are ripe for exploitation. It is all true in the healthcare industry. I mean, why is it that an MRI at one joint will cost $500 and it's $2,500, you know, at a different joint five blocks down the road? Like, that is insanity. And the price fixing and the fact that you don't know how anything costs and every single one of us needs healthcare at some point in time is just,
yes,
bananas to me. So, you know, the only silver lining between from this horrific act of violence, which I condemn, we don't make the world better through violence, is that perhaps it will catalyze a conversation and is catalyzing a conversation has been needed. We've needed to have a deeper conversation about this for years. And it just brings me back to Donald Trump, right? Which is during the debate, what are you going to do about healthcare? I have concepts of a plan.
Concepts of a plan.
In his interview with Kristen Welker, I have concepts of a plan. We'll talk.
He didn't even say that. He said, if we have a better plan.
Yeah. We'll talk to some people.
He actually said the word if. If we can come up with a better plan, then we will move to that.
So all of this brings me to Time Magazine putting Donald Trump on the cover, this announced yesterday, as the person of the year. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Your thoughts and comments. Welcome. I'm joined as a co-host today by Tom Paulswitz, a two-time congressional candidate, friend of mine, and a friend of yours. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I just wanted to make this clear in response to Cindy's call at the top of the hour. Time Magazine does not pick people of the year based on their goodness.
Yes.
they base their person of the year basically on impact and like news making.
Newsworthiness.
Yes. And if Kamala Harris would have won the presidential election, she would be the person of the year. But yep. she didn't. And Donald Trump was at the center of almost every single news cycle. I mean, the CEO assassination is pretty much the only news cycle that isn't entirely focused on Donald Trump, and yet it still relates to him because he has no health care policy.
Yes. And, you know, this is the part about Donald Trump that, you know, like him or hate him, he seems to be able to garner clicks, which means that reporters and people who write stories and people that get stuff on the internet, if they put Trump in the story, they know people are going to click on it because they either love him or hate him. And that is part of the cycle, I think, that at least from 2016 to 2020, that damaged this country. And we're heading right back there, which means to me that I don't think journalists have learned their lesson. I don't think that the way we've set up the way we absorb news and the way we digest information has changed. In fact, it's probably changed for the worse.
Yes, it's worse, I would say.
Which means that I think the idea that Kellyanne Conway said about alternative facts is going to pretty much be what the next 4 years are about.
To me, this is all kind of where we've crossed over this threshold into not only like moral relativism and ethical relativism, yes. but also there's no observable objective facts, and you can just say anything and you say it as many times as you need to until your group believes you and thinks the other people are lying. And this it's not helpful for folks that voted for Trump. It's not helpful for Kamala Harris supporters. It's not helpful for anything to be in a place where we literally cannot have conversations anymore because there's no agreed upon framework to have a conversation or a disagreement.
Exactly. It's actually driving us apart, and it's all based on perceived ideology. But like you said, when you're operating off two different sets of facts, there's no common ground. And I've been thinking about this a lot, and I'm not sure what has to change. The Rupert Murdoch struggle with his family about what's going to happen to Fox News. There's a glimmer of hope there, which means maybe they don't just spread disinformation on a regular basis. I don't have a lot of hope of that, but I think something has to change.
Folks, that's Tom Paulswitz, two-time congressional candidate, one of the most reasonable men in politics. We're going to come right back. I'm Maggie Dawn. We're going to talk about whether or not Donald Trump will actually deliver for his voters once he's sworn into office on January 20th. Your calls and comments and texts are welcome. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is Civic Media, where we're all about real news and great conversation. Join us more in just a moment.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
What's up, everybody? I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Do you know that we're in the midst of Civic Media's grown-up gift list text-to-win sweepstakes contest? In the 4 o'clock hour, my little buddy Dom Salvio will be getting on the air. He's going to drop a keyword on you. You're going to want to text that keyword via the Civic Media app, and that's going to qualify you to win either $100 or an overnight stay at the Chula Vista Resort in the 4 o'clock hour. Yeah, not so bad.
Nice.
Cash in the holiday season, not so bad. Nor is a little getaway. So be sure that you got the app ready and keep it locked here on Civic Media. That text will also register you to win one of 8 grand prizes, a grab bag, if you will, from our grown-up gift list, including things like an espresso machine, luggage, a humidifier, and a couple of robot vacuums, all to make your life easier and or more fun. So please do participate and check it out. We drop those keywords in the 7 o'clock hour, the 7 a.m. hour, 11 a.m. hour, 1 p.m. and 4 p.m. every day. Want to get some text messages in. Sue from Franklin also saying time chooses the person based on basically news making. Len from Madison, personally, I don't have a problem with Mr. Mangione killing this guy. Because eliminating people that enrich themselves from the pain and suffering of others needs to be looked at. I hear you, but disagree. Tyler from Wisconsin Rapids, maybe the guy had a Bruce Wayne complex chasing villains. Mark from Prairie du Sac also points out that wasn't Hitler person of the year back in the 30s. I actually think that may be true. I haven't had time to fact check that, but there have been. I remember growing up, Tom, there were
some very interesting
dictators, like, and
I think the Ayatollah Khomeini
was one
year.
And what was the dictator from? He was an African country. He had the hat. I can't remember the guy's name. This is my
yes. There have been, they're agnostic.
They're agnostic as to good or bad or indifferent. Yes. It's just news making.
It's just news. Yes.
And Andrew from Maine also pointing out often the person of the year is the president elect in an election year. Yep. And folks, let's see here. Andrew from Maine also saying facts exist. Campaigns, especially GOP campaigns, have realized that the generic voter doesn't actually care about facts. Certainly not enough to verify. Matt from Middleton. Hey, Maggie, how about we follow economist Victor Fuchs, who wrote in the 70s that if we didn't adopt a single payer universal healthcare system, we as a country would always have growing debt. It's an economic and financial issue as well.
Or Theodore Roosevelt, or FDR, or Dwight Eisenhower.
A Delano Democrat, if you will.
Yes.
I think that's what we all are. Thank you, Tom, from West Dallas. He's reminding me that the African dictator with the hat that I was trying to remember was none other than Idi Amin.
Yes, Idi Amin.
I do believe that he was also potentially a Time Person of the Year. Here's what we wanted to get to, everybody. Tom and I... We often just send generic thoughts to each other the day before the show because there's so much going on. Is Donald Trump actually going to deliver real and measurable results? So let's assume that facts matter and that there are facts. Let's assume that we can measure things. Let's assume that people in good faith voted for Donald Trump because they want some of their economic anxiety relieved. How do we know if Trump's delivering? Is he actually going to deliver? And I wanted to start with this fact. Okay, reporting yesterday has made it clear that Elon Musk's total net worth has nearly doubled since Donald Trump's election. He is the first human being to break the net worth barrier of $400 billion.
With a B.
With a B, billion. Yes. And I wanted to give everybody an actual idea of how much $400 billion is. Please listen to what I am going to tell you right now. If you spent $10 million a day.
A day.
Every day. For 100 years, you will not have spent even $400 billion. You will still have just under $150 million left to spend. I'm going to say this again. Elon Musk's net worth is $444 billion. Here's how much that is. If you spent $10 million a day, every single day for 100 years, you will not have even gotten into the $400 billion mark. So trying to explain things like in this context, Tom, I think is so important. When I say we need to take money out of politics, but it's because it's perfectly corrupting, this is what I mean. Like, What's $42 billion to Elon Musk? Not much. Like, what's he is reportedly spent $250 million on the campaign.
Yeah, $250 million.
Excuse me, $250 million dollars, $250 million.
$250 million.
Well, that's let's do the math again. $10 million a day. That's just under a month for him. Like, if you could, you know, buy all of the communications or the most important communication outlet for 4 days worth of work, and you could basically buy the presidency and the U.S. government for a month's worth of your work and bend them to your will.
Yes.
Wouldn't you do like that? Sounds like a
why wouldn't you? I mean, I would invest it. I would invest $250 million if I knew it was going to get me $200 billion in return.
That's really good ROI.
That's a great ROI. I would do that every single time. Let's put that number into one more perspective. Please. I read recently that cancer patients, all cancer patients in the United States over, I think it was the year 2022, they had to pay a little over $16 billion in deductibles.
Wow. Wow. Folks, we're going to come right back. We're going to talk about, is Donald Trump actually going to work for you? Or does Elon Musk own him? Does his billionaire boys club cabinet own him? Is that who he's really working for? I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. It's all real news and great conversation next.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
What's up, everybody? I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Got my special guest host in the chairs with me. His name is Tom Paulswitz. He's a two-time congressional candidate and a small business owner. We're talking about whether or not Donald Trump will actually help the middle class. I think that's the bottom line question.
Mm-hmm. That is the question.
Is he actually going to help working people? To what degree, right? Because one of the things about campaigning is basically he promised everything, like everything's going to be fixed and world peace and
day one. Yes.
So even setting aside some of that extremist rhetoric, let me just start with this question. And then I'd like to dig in a little bit to all the conservatives out there, especially some of our regular callers. What do you think the odds are that Donald Trump actually makes things better for the middle class? And odds make off of the fact that he handed a completely broken economy over to Joe Biden. Odds make off the fact that there will be more billionaires in his cabinet than in any presidential administration by, like, I don't know, tenfold or something. I mean, it's just not even measurable. Odds make, based on the fact that Elon Musk has gotten more wealthier in the last 30 days than he did in his entire lifetime before that, and now has enough money to spend $10 million a day, every day, for 100 years and still not spend all of his money. Like, what do you think the odds are that Trump is going to be responsive to the needs of the middle class? What are you looking for, Tom, in terms of like indicators, in terms of how are you going to measure that? What should we all be looking at?
Yeah, I think for me, it starts with inflation. You know, the CPI report came out yesterday. Shows inflation it ticked up a little bit, but the one underlying component that the economists have been waiting to see if it was going to start going down is rental expenses and housing expenses, and it's finally coming back down. You know, if you follow economics at all, you know that inflation peaked and has been drifting down for the last at least year and a half, close to 2 years. Though recently, the most recent inflation survey that came out, people expect inflation to increase, but it was really an interesting survey because college-educated people expected inflation to increase, and people without a college degree expected inflation to decrease, and that was based on Trump's promises. Now, that it's not physically possible that inflation is going to go down by anything that the president's going to do at this point. The only thing that the president has the ability to do is raise inflation. So to me, that's the one thing I'm watching, because after knocking on so many doors in the fall, the economy was the number one thing. People were just upset that prices were so high. And, you know, they're in for a tough shock because prices aren't going to come down the same way, especially if he institutes the tariffs the way he wants to.
Yeah, I have such a sense of unease going into this administration, because he will enjoy at the front end some of the buoying factor from Biden's good economic policies, right?
Yes.
And I call today a saying occurred to me that pocketbook economics, that kitchen table economics, always trail sort of national or corporate economics by a goodly margin. And that the impact of economic policies takes even longer. So I'd say like kitchen table economics probably trail by at least a 12 to 18 month lag than the overall sort of national economy and corporate economics. And that the national economy and corporate economics are often trailing a year plus, sometimes even more, depending on how the Fed manages the interest rates, even more what presidential economic policies are. And so you have to think of this in like dominoes. So let's put this together for people, Tom. Presidential policies change. That's going to take minimum a year to show up in the macro national economic trajectory and the performance of businesses and corporations. And that's then going to take another clip of time, say another year at the minimum, to sort of show up in people's pocketbooks and their kitchen table economics. The thing that I'm really uneasy about is that I think American taxpayers and the middle class are going to be somewhat buoyed by Joe Biden's economic policies for at least a couple of years. And they may
easily.
They may be inclined to falsely attribute that to Donald Trump, which is not, it's parallel a bit to what happened when he took over from President Obama.
Yeah. And and two things. One is President Obama and President Biden will never get credit for avoiding depressions, which they both did.
They both did.
Right. They did it in different ways. President Obama gave money directly to businesses to prop them up to make sure they were, they didn't fail, which was the too big to fail policy.
Yep.
And then President Biden and the Democrats pushed to put money in people's pocketbooks and gave money to a whole bunch of small businesses to make sure they could keep people on the payroll, even though they weren't producing revenue at the time. Right. So two different strategies.
Huge.
They both worked. They both didn't create high unemployment. They both didn't throw people out of their homes. You know, I would say that the Biden philosophy worked a lot better because it got money into the hands of people directly.
Yes.
Where, you know, saving the businesses still caused a huge housing blip, which we're just coming out of right now. But I think the bigger thing is we're going to see another bubble.
Yeah.
So Trump's coming in. He's going to create another bubble that's going to create some excesses that's going to cause businesses that we think are too big to fail to fail at some point.
Yeah.
And the government's going to have to come in and bail it out after doing tax cuts and after exploding the deficit. And my concern is, where's that money going to come from?
Right. Well, and I think Republicans are now saying it very clearly, almost daily, on the friendly outlets, which is Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid.
Right.
That's when we reach the pain point of pain points, that's where the cutting's going to be.
Yes.
And again, that's what's really concerning to me, that people cannot put cause and effect together very well. Let's go to the text lines just for a few comments, if you will. Tom, Angie from Monroe saying, I hope America is still here by the time Trump is done. I'm going to recast that a little bit, Angie. I'm going to say this. I hope the middle class is still here by the time Donald Trump is done. And I want to emphasize that really specifically. The middle class, not the working poor, the middle class. I hope the middle class is still here by the time Trump is done, because the Republican insistence that presidents are kings, money is speech, and corporations are people has led us to one of the most corrupt systems that still appears, by all accounts, to have a functioning electoral process, right? We have a functioning electoral process. Yes. That's not the problem. But the democratic outcomes, small d, aren't happening. And small d democracy means that you're doing the things that benefit the greatest number of people most of the time. We're not seeing that. If you've got a guy that can spend $10 million a day, every day for 100 years and not spend all of his money, and money is speech, guess what? We're all screwed. I'm just saying. Mark from Prairie du Sac says, I'm not advocating for anything here. Murder is wrong. But given the proliferation of firearms in our country, all of these captains of industry probably don't feel too safe. No kidding. Andrew from Maine. Elon Musk's, quote, value is a system of the challenges of capitalism. Has Musk's increase in wealth over the last month in the marketplace had any measurable contribution to society? And no, nothing's materially gotten better over the last month. Len from Madison, the best indication of what someone is going to do in the future is based on what they have done in the past. And in the past, Donald Trump gave more tax cuts to billionaires and 100 millionaires and large corporations by exponential degrees than he ever gave to any of us working suckers. Come on now. Andy from Wausau said Obama gave pallets of money to Iran. No, he didn't. That's weird. I mean, if you want to make a critique, you can critique Joe Biden for effectively letting Iran access billions of dollars, but we're getting off into forum.
And Maggie, this is one of the more interesting things that I see happening right now is Tesla stock is going through the roof.
Yeah.
Yet this administration is going to end the credits, end the federal tax credits for electric vehicles, and they're going to be pushing more pumping of oil, which is at exact odds of what Tesla's all about. And when you think about Tesla, their actual sales have been dropping rapidly because people look at Elon Musk and go, I don't want to be associated with that company. So,
Elon Musk's, a lot of his wealth increase is actually coming from SpaceX right now, right? And like the anticipated value of SpaceX, the guy's got $15.5 billion in federal contracts, yet he's going to be responsible for government efficiency. I mean, that's the most basic definition of a conflict of interest that I've ever heard.
Right. But we're pretending that there are no conflicts of interest, and we're pretending that people are just going to do the right thing for the rest of us. That's what's really happening, which is making Jeff Bezos very nervous because he's not on the inside right now. Right. And he would like some of those government contracts, because as a billionaire, it's easier to get a government contract than you and I.
Of course it is. I mean, Andy from Wausau, he's ticked off and he's, you guys are horribly at fault. Put that together for me, Andy, and forget past for a moment. Let's just talk about going forward. Andy from Wausau, do you agree that money in politics is corrupting, right? That Elon Musk shouldn't be able to spend $250 million to buy the American, basically the whole of American government. I mean,
to buy a seat at the table. It's basically what he did.
Yeah.
He said, I'm going to give you a whole bunch of money and I want to be involved. I'm not getting elected. I'm not running for office, but I'm giving you a bunch of money and therefore you should listen to me.
And I
firmly believe though, Maggie, and I don't know what you think about this, but I firmly believe that two people like Elon Musk and Donald Trump cannot stay in the same sphere for too long. I think there'll be a tremendous falling out at some point. And it'll be interesting to see what happens next.
Oh, you mean when the two massive egos and billionaires yes. come to loggerheads over something?
Yes,
you mean,
it yeah. will not last.
That's one to watch. I got a question. Jim from Appleton said, hey, does your calculation of Musk's wealth take into effect just interest on his wealth? No, it's as if he would never earn another penny for the rest of his life. He's got $444 billion. If he never made a penny in a savings account or an interest-bearing savings account or checking account for the rest of his life, he still could spend $10 million a day for 100 years every day and still have nearly $1.5 billion left. Excuse me.
And early in his career.
$150 billion left. It's insane.
Right. Early in his career, that completely hinged on the fact of him getting a bailout loan from the U.S. government in order to keep Tesla going.
You know, the next time the U.S. government bails out industries or businesses, do you think we might ask for some equity?
I ran on that. I don't think we should be giving grants. I don't think we should be doing a lot of things when it comes to business. We should be taking an equity position. We should be
like
the
investor.
Biggest venture capital in the entire world, and we do a lot better.
Yeah, we want to talk about deficit management. There you go.
Exactly.
Folks, that's Tom Paulswitz. He's a two-time congressional candidate and a small business owner. I'm Maggie Dawn. Your thoughts and disagreements. You too, Andy from Wausau, are always welcome here on the Civic Media Radio Network, where we're all about real news and great conversation. We're going to talk about what the heck went on with Christopher Wray? And why did Christopher Wray take the route he did when so many other people are saying, bring it on, Donald Trump? We discuss next right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join us, 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-75-CIVIC.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
For billionaires and 100 millionaires, what are we to do? Oppose that at every step of the way. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I got a special guest co-host with me every Thursday. His name's Tom Paulswitz. He's a two-time congressional candidate. Before we get into Chris Wray announcing his resignation, you wanted to talk about the Bucks in the Emirates Cup. Give us your take, Tom. I can't hear
Very
Tom.
Very excited. Yeah. Very excited about the Bucks. I think, you know, they started the season 2-8. Since then, they've gone 11-3. And I think they were written off for almost dead at one point. But now they're coming back. But having Chris Middleton back and watching him play, I think that, you know, they're going to play in this this made-up NBA Cup thing, which is supposed to generate some enthusiasm. But really, it gets the players to Vegas.
This is saying, like, cool, right. I'll watch.
It gets the players to Vegas. But the interesting thing is the winning team, they each get $500,000. And for a guy like Giannis, $500,000 is like, okay, that'll help pay a, you know, maybe a quarterly tax bill if I'm lucky. But I think for a lot of the younger guys on the team, it's a significant amount. And when you talk to these players and you hear what they have to say, they're really playing for those other people on their team.
Yeah,
because this is a very unique thing that allows them, because they're actually playing for one of the newest members. They want him to buy a house. Aww. And he's going to use the money to buy a house, which, you know, okay.
That sounds like profit sharing. Gee whiz. I wish we had more of that everywhere.
Right.
We all eat together. That's a good thing.
But, you know, the distinction in the NBA is there's some very rich people. And then there's a whole bunch of players.
Then there's
who
the workhorses.
Who are getting by, and it's a lot like society, but they're all in it together. All on one team.
Yes, there is a greater element of team. You know, it's true in the NFL. It's also true in Major League Baseball. I got to tell you, the Juan Soto deal. First of all, so glad Chris Middleton is back. huge.
Yes.
I mean, Chris is the guy. It just does. It never works as well if he is not on.
He's
the
a great
court.
Player.
He really
he's got
is.
Great vision. He
yep.
just yep.
Yeah. He's player. One of those guys. He's smart up and down the court, offense, defense. Yep. Just a great player. But I do have to mention, because I'm such a baseball nut, the Juan Soto deal is just like what? And the Mets? Okay. I mean, the Mets have tried this before, and it hasn't worked. $766 million, folks. If you aren't a big sports fan, the biggest contract in baseball, I think he just beats Shohei Ohtani, is $766 million to Juan Soto. He's leaving the Yankees, going to the Mets. They beat the Yankees' offer by like $6 million. I was like, really? For the $5 or $6 million, you're going to basically give up a guaranteed World Series to join the Mets. Right. All right, to man. Cool.
Do what you got to do. But I think the other thing is they're going to pay him. They're going to pay him over, what, $70 million when he's 41 years old for one season.
Yeah.
And these guys, you know, after the absence of steroids now, is these guys are showing that they're back to declining in skills. In their late 30s.
I was just going to say, not only the declination of skills, but the injury levels are up across the board. Before we run out,
they're still paying Bobby Bonilla. Don't they pay him like $1 million a year? So, yep. They're the Mets, though. You got to love them.
Yeah, gluttons, if you will. And, of course, my best of luck to Willy Adames as he shuffles off to San Francisco. Yeah. I'm curious as to how that's going to all pan out. Wanted to get your take on Chris Ray's announcement of his resignation. I also think this is a galactic mistake. And one of the things that I wanted to ask you about, because we're hearing from Kinzinger, Jack Smith, Liz Cheney, Dan Goldman, who is one of the impeachment prosecutors, their response is, do not give me a pardon, Joe Biden. I don't want that. Bring it on, Donald Trump. I just think, like, Chris Ray, I want to keep the FBI out of the fray. It's like those attacks are going to come whether you're the director or not. And
yes.
Stay the freaking course, man. Make him fire you. What's your take? Was that a mistake or the right thing to do, Tom?
I think it's the right thing to do. And here's my reasoning why is he is protecting his team. He's hoping that it allows his team to stay in place because they don't have to defend him then. All they have to do is defend the FBI.
But and, the attacks are going to happen anyways, aren't they?
Oh, sure. But there's not this guise of, I only did it because of the previous FBI director type thing. I understand.
But don't you make that a possibility? And here's my sort of baseline point, and we'll have some time a little bit later to get back to this question. When you sign up to do those top leadership posts, it's going to come with heat and it's going to come with a lot of attacks. It just does.
Sure. But he's going to be fired. Right. And there's going, whether there's going to be a hearing or not or whatever. Right. He's just saying, look, let's not delay the inevitable, but let me make sure that the people I have in place don't have to cover for me. They just have to work for the FBI.
I want to talk to you
right,
more
but
about
it's almost
this and
impossible.
We'll get back to it.
You know, when you have people who are loyal,
it's not going to make any difference that he's gone.
I don't think it's going to make any difference either, but I can understand the logic. I can understand the
reasoning. I think it's bad logic.
I don't think so, because there's more than enough battles that are going to happen. It doesn't have to be personality battles. It's already for the heart and soul of the FBI. That's the battle.
Clearly, but I don't think losing your fearless leader helps morale or helps the institution. We'll debate this more. We're going to turn to the local after the top of the hour. Recently, a discrimination complaint filed in Menominee Falls. We're going to talk to the parent who filed one of the complaints. You're going to want to keep it locked. Turning local after top of the hour. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network news, weather, and sports updates next.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.